Welcome to the Roy Matlock Jr. Money and Business Hours, where he'll help you fix your finances once and for all. To reach Roy, call 615-843-2999. That is 615-843-2999, or visit RoyMatlockJr.com. Now, here's your host, Roy.
Roy Matlock Jr. here, and we are continuing talking money as we do every single week. If you're just tuning in, I want to encourage you to check out RoyMatlockJr.com because we have all types of resources for you, and we will continue down our path. We've been going all year long on a kind of a series from, you know, starting in life all the way up until retirement planning and all these kind of things. And so now where we're at now, you know, our last show, we talked about different investment choices, how to understand investments, and how to understand the different retirement plans, be it your retirement plan through your 401k or your IRA or whatever it may be. We've talked about annuities. So I would encourage you, once again, go back to RoyMatlockJr.com or just Google the Roy Matlock Jr. Money Business Hour and get a hold of the podcast, and you can kind of catch up. But it's a educational series all the way through. And so today we're going to talk more of the mindset that you are out there, you're at or near retirement, or maybe you know, within 10 years, or you're getting ready to retire, and maybe you have been planning. Hopefully you've been doing a great job and doing that kind of thing. You know, I've read all of these statistics among people that make $100,000 a year or more. One of the things that they have in common is they have someone they work with when it comes to a financial advisor. And the reasoning behind that is just like anything else. I've said this over and over and over again. You should always look to get a team of experts to guide you and find somebody you trust and like and things like that. So if you have been doing that, you should have a plan. This will give you a way to kind of determine, you know, if your plan's in place. But what I talk about when it comes to people that are, when they're getting ready to retire or they're near there, you know, we always go back to the FIN number, and the FIN number is the ideal number. That ideal number is the monthly income that you want to be able to have at retirement, and that is inflation adjusted. Then you take that FIN number and you come up with an amount of money that will allow you to do reasonable withdrawals on it and a reasonable rate of return, to where you know that at the end of the day, you're not going to end up running out of money. We'll talk about things like that. But these are areas that we start with. And then, you know, as I know, a lot of people, they're like, well, a lot of people don't do what they're supposed to do early on. They get behind. And so now we're starting to figure this out. We said, well, you're making $120,000 a year. We're probably going to be rolling at about 80. All right. But at least you know. And so the first thing that I tell people is, let's look at our income sources. Where are we going to get our income from when we retire? You know, you could have your retirement plan through work. You could have Social Security. You have all these different types of things. Maybe you have some investment properties. We'll talk about that, all those kind of things. So let's start with the income sources. So let's project out in the future and say to ourselves, well, we're going to get this much in Social Security. We're going to get this much. It looks as if we're going to have about $800,000 sitting in our retirement plan that we're going to be able to roll over. And that's going to generate at 4%, $30,000 a year, give or take. So we know that in terms of withdrawals. If we get a decent investment on it, it should grow every year. So we've got that. Maybe we've got a rental house. We come up with all that. We say, here's our income. So now we're going to go in and we're going to set our retirement budget down. And we put it on paper. We say, well, here's our income. You know, here's our expenses. Now, keep in mind, your expenses change a little bit from the standpoint that when you were working, your goal was to save as much money as you could. And so when you get to retirement age and you're pulling on your retirement income, you don't have that savings portion in there. I've always said that you start with 100% of your income, try to save 25% of it, live on half, and have 25% go to taxes. Well, when you retire, you know, you can say, well, that 25% that I was putting aside, I don't have to do that. So that takes my number down a little bit. We do want to look at our taxation to see where our taxes are going to be. So we start putting this all together. So we got our income, we got our after-tax income, we got our Social Security income, we got our rental properties, we got all these different things that we may have. We come up with our outgo. We have to look at some of the things that come into play, you know, healthcare expenses. I'm going to get into that later in the show. And we come up with a plan. So now we have a plan. Maybe we're 10 years out. Maybe we're right there. You know, I spoke with someone just last week, and they're like within 3 months of being able to do it, and they're looking at it. They're saying, okay, what are some of the things we need to do? So once we do that, I go and I talk about three areas or three P's, and the three P's are protect your income, protect your purchasing power, and protect against any kind of health crisis, we'll call it, or normal health. And so how do we do that? We protect our income. Maybe we go in and we do some things that have some lifetime income guarantees. Maybe we do a portion of it in annuities. We'll talk about that, to where you have a guaranteed income. We look at our Social Security. When are we going to draw it? I can give you some numbers in a little while about that. Generally speaking, my experience is I like for people to draw it early as possible. You know, at least at the full Social Security age, I can give you numbers how long it takes you to break even on that. So I like doing that. We like to protect against, we got to protect our purchasing power risk. And what is that? That purchasing power risk is inflation. Assume this, that if you retire at 65, at 85, you need twice as much money to be able to live the same way. We know what inflation is. All we got to do is go to the gas pump right now. So we got to protect that. And then lastly, protect against that potential nursing home stay. I always recommend right around the 60, in that range. It's still affordable. If you don't have long-term care insurance, that's something you want to consider. And what long-term care does is it will protect you in the event that either you or your spouse go into a nursing home, or it will even help you do home health, even to the point that they come out there and build ramps for you to get in and out, because the insurance companies are trying to keep you out of the nursing home. It's much less expensive, that kind of thing. So we've got the three P's, our income, our purchasing power, and our health care risk. So we're going to do some things to do that. Like I said, we may consider looking at annuities for some long-term income guarantees. We may look at, we got to have some type of things that will keep us up with inflation. That's why we got to have a portion of our money in the market, meaning the stock market. And then the last thing that we want to do is consider long-term care. We're going to talk about that. You know, we're dealing with scenarios right now. Rates are low, the lowest they've ever been. So you have to be a little bit different in the way we invest our money. And so as we go through today, I want you to just think about what we're doing. We're going to start out and we're going to start with a plan. If you have no plan whatsoever, by the end of this show, you're going to have a starting plan. And so with that being said, I appreciate you sticking in here with us. Go back to RoyMountainLikeJr.com. I would encourage you also to sign up for the 12-part course. We call it our client education series. It will help you A to Z. It's about 13 45-minute sections to help you win the money game. We'll be right back. Roy Matlack Jr. here. We're talking money, and today's show we're talking about what to do when you're at or near retirement and how to set things up correctly. If you're just coming in from the break, we're talking about some of the areas. The first thing we do is always go back to the budget. The budget's the foundation of financial independence. If you do not have a budget, you do not have a chance, because I've learned this. I mean, all you got to do is look at people that win the lottery and people, professional athletes that made, hundreds of millions of dollars that, are going down the tubes and stuff like that. Because if you don't have a budget set up, companies are out there marketing to you, and they can sure do it. I mean, they're professional marketers. They show you the shiny things that you think you have to have, and the next thing you know, you regret you did it, but it's too late. And so we want to start with the budget. Let's set the budget up. If you want to go to RoyMountainLikeJr.com, we have budget forms there, and we also have a show in our series that 45 minutes on how to set the budget up. And I know people that have gone through their whole life, and they've never had a budget. They've had an accounting system. They count what they've already spent, but they've never had a real budget. And so if you want to find out about that, just download the budget forms. And also, we've got all the details on that. So we go in there. We come up with our income sources. We include Social Security in there, any other investment income, any other things that we can use on that. We protect our income by getting certain things maybe in place, a portion into maybe an annuity or something like that, only because, not because I think annuities are such a great thing. They have their pros and cons, but it does give you one source that you can go in and say, look, I want 5%. You know, I know I get 5% for the rest of my life or something like that. And a lot of these annuities have that kind of stuff. And the idea is that, you know, they have it invested and hopefully it'll outperform that. And if it does, there'll be an inheritance left, but you take a portion of your money and you do that. Rates are low right now. That's one of the other reasons that we do that. In the typical world, we used to say, well, if you retire, you should take about 60% of your money, put it in the market, 40% of your money, put it in the bond market. And typical long-term rates on the stock market are about 10. The long-term rates on a bond market are about 4. So if you did something like that and you took those two, if it was a 50-50 stock portfolio and bond portfolio, you're sitting there at about a 7% return and you pull 4 out, you got 3% going back in for inflation and you're saying, all right, there's my plan. That's easy. When the market goes down, you got your bonds to pull from so we don't sell at a discount. And then if the market's going up, we may pull from the stock side. That's how balance funds kind of work. And that allows you to be selling off on the top side, so selling high in the market. And when the market goes the opposite direction, you are not selling. You're pulling from the bond portfolio. A lot of times we've even set up buckets for people. We say, hey, market's down. Let's move to the bond bucket and pull the money from there. Challenge that we're running into right now, though, is that rates are at an all-time low. You know, if you're buying a home right now, you're thinking, man, these are great. Rates are great. But if you're saving money and you go to the bank or you have a bond or something like that, rates are at an all-time low. So we have to think about that. So as we continue on, we're going to talk about the solutions to those kind of things. We have some 59 and a half considerations. If you're age 59 and a half right now, one of the things that you have the option to do is do what's called an in-service withdrawal from your 401k. So if you're working and, you know, for a company, you can go in and you can actually move your retirement account into an IRA. By moving it into an IRA, you can pick up some other options that maybe are not in there. For instance, a lot of your 401ks don't have any type of annuity options. You might want to do something like that. So if you're already over 59 and a half, if you thought you had to leave your job in order to roll over your 401k, you can do it and remain there, continue to contribute while you're working, get all the matching funds and stuff like that. Some other things that we consider when we retire are, should we do some things with our retirement plan, maybe convert it to a Roth? I'm going to talk about that. You know, one of the things I believe about the Roth conversion that is most important is that if you do that, we want to use outside funds to pay the taxes. And so let's say you've got $1 million in your IRA and you want to convert it to life to tax-free income, and you know there's going to be $150,000, $200,000 in taxes, I don't want to take it from the actual retirement account because then I'm having to pay taxes on the money that I'm paying taxes on. So I want to be able to do that outside with outside funds. So maybe I've got, you know, a couple hundred thousand sitting in something else. I would be more inclined to pay that and then keep my IRA, you know, intact and keep my entire $1 million, whatever it is, sitting over there. So we have to make sure if we're going to consider a Roth conversion, where's the money coming from on the conversion? So we have that. You might consider downsizing your house. You know, right now, the real estate market, I don't care where you're at. You know, in Nashville, where the show is being broadcast, I mean, the real estate market is, it's just hot. I mean, and it's totally a seller's market. And so one of the challenges that you run into when you do something like that, you say, well, it's great. I can get me a house that I can sell my house for top dollar, but you're going to have to buy another one at top dollar. So when you do that, that's fine. Okay. A lot of people want to downsize. They want to get rid of the stairs. They want to do all these kind of things, whatever it may be. Just be smart and understand that if you buy a house in a hot market, don't expect that house to be some big investment. What you need to look at, it's a place to live. You're going to stay in that house for a while because, you know, anytime you have markets rocking like they are in the real estate business, you know, they're all fueled by supply, demand, and interest rates and stuff like that. When it changes, rates go up a little bit, supply gets a little bit larger. People start saying, hey, this is a chance where we make a lot of money. And as soon as they do, they put their house on the market. What you end up having is, you know, it softens up a little bit. And if you bought at the peak of the market or on things like that, you may have to hold on to it longer. And so I would encourage you, if you're purchasing a home or considering a downsize, just make sure that you have a proper, understanding of what you're getting into. I would absolutely, you know, get with a real estate agent. And if you get with that real estate agent, you can get some advice. I would find someone that actually knows what they're doing in this type of market. They've been around for a while. They've proven it. They've got a track record. It's like anything else. You know, I don't want to be the first the guy's first open heart surgery. I want somebody else to do that. So I want to make sure that I'm working with someone, if I'm in the real estate side, to make sure that they know what they're doing. They know how to make proper offers and get best value and whatever it takes in order to get my house ready to where I can get the most for it. But the most important thing about purchasing a house is find something you like, because if you buy into a market and it's an up market, you may have to stay there for a while in order to get returns on it. And so we've got more things we're going to do. We're going to talk about paying off the house, withdrawal options, all this kind of stuff. All right, we're going to keep going. I think the age 60 is kicked in. My producer just told me I got two more minutes. So I've got, days and weeks and that I can continue talking. So let's keep on. So what we basically are doing when it comes to your real estate is a financial product. Your mortgage is a financial product. And you want to make sure you understand the financial product. So if you're purchasing a home or downsizing, doing whatever you want to do, get a competent professional to help you. That's what I would do. The next question is, should you pay your home off? You know, my basic belief is that paying a home off when we have the lowest interest rates in history is not a good idea. Matter of fact, my mindset is what is the least I can pay on a monthly basis and drag it out for as long as I can drag it out when I'm borrowing money at almost free, 2.5-3%. And so I don't recommend you pay your home off. I know a lot of people, they have been sold, I just want to have my home paid for. Well, guys, if you've got an account sitting over there that has been averaging 7-9% forever, and you owe $200,000 on your house, and you've got $200,000 sitting there growing, your house is paid for. Just remember that. You can always pay for it. But why would you take money that you could have invested at rates much higher than 2.5% and go pay your home off? It just doesn't make any mathematical. This is purely a mathematical issue. If someone told me, hey, you can borrow money at 2.5% and we'll give you 8 on it, then I would borrow all I could borrow and afford to pay. And so you may want to consider that. So should you pay your home off? I would say no. We'll talk about a reverse mortgage when we come back in. My name is Roy Matlock Jr. We are talking money. You can visit roymatlockjr.com and hit some of our resource pages and tune into some of our previous podcasts, and we'll keep educating. We'll be right back. Okay, we are going to continue on things you got to consider when you retire. We just got through talking about your income sources, things you got to protect, 59.5 considerations, when to draw Social Security, and we get in more detail on it, Roth conversions. I mean, there's so many things out there that you need to know. If you're going to downsize your house, when should you do it? Should you pay your house off? I just got through talking about that. What about a reverse mortgage? And, I love to talk to people about reverse mortgages because reverse mortgages, in my opinion, of course, this is a radio show where you have opinions. It's not specific to people, but what do I think about a reverse mortgage? Well, my take is a reverse mortgage, especially now, is a great option for people. The majority of people that I run into, and I've been meeting with people for 35 years, and some of the things that I know in meeting with people, the first thing I do is if I were to meet with you, I would say, okay, first thing, do you own your home? What's it worth? If you sold it today, what would you sell it for? And they say $400,000. Okay, great. Do you have a mortgage? No, it's paid off. Okay. Oh, great. Okay. Then we go in, what about retirement plans? And they have $200,000-$300,000 average. Is about $300,000, something like that. And then they're going to get Social Security, got a little something else. And so 50% of their net worth is tied up in their house. In some cases, I see people, it's even worse than that. And that house is great that it's paid for, but what if you could live in that house and rather than having 100% equity in it, only maybe have 50% equity or 40% equity, and you could take that other money and put it somewhere and get an income off of it. So that's what a reverse mortgage does for people. It allows someone to access their paid-for home, or in many cases, their not paid-for home. They are able to turn around and do a reverse mortgage and eliminate the monthly payment. Maybe they've got, you know, even I've run into people where they have, you know, cars and credit cards, and they owe $100,000 on their mortgage. Their house is worth a lot, okay? So they can do that. Another thing that I've talked to people about, if they are wanting to downsize in order to be able to get their cash flow plan in place, one way you do that, let's say you have a $500,000 home and you sell it, it's paid for, and you go to a $300,000 home. Well, you could go take $200,000 and have the $300,000 paid off, okay? Or you could go take $150,000 and do a reverse mortgage and still not have a payment. Then you have that much more money you could do something with. And so, understanding that reverse mortgages are nothing more than a mortgage that will have to be paid off when both of you die, and whoever gets that property will have the equity left over in that property, depending on what the equity is. If there's no equity, then of course there's nothing left. But the point of it is that if there's a mortgage, a payment mortgage or a optional payment mortgage, anytime someone dies, whoever inherits that, in order to get that home, they have to, they're going to sell it, pay it off, do whatever, maybe even do another mortgage on it. And so what you do is you have to understand these things. They're not taking your house, any of that kind of stuff. I always like to talk about it. I'm not in the reverse mortgage business. However, I have used and introduced people to that type of business, that type of mortgage, because in my opinion, it makes good sense. Okay. It's just when you retire, what we do is we work on our income streams. When we're accumulating money, we work on our asset base. So think about it this way. When we're accumulating, we work on accumulating assets. So what we're doing is we're putting money in, we're saving money, we're doing everything we can to accumulate assets. Then when we get to that point where we're going to retire, we're going to turn around and utilize those assets to create a cash flow. And the cash flow is what's going to be what we live on. And that cash flow funds our budgets. And our goal is to have enough cash flow over and above our expenses to where we can live a nice life and retire and enjoy life and not be worried to death and things like that. And so that goes back to how do we create income streams, all right? While we're talking about real estate, you know, I have people all the time, they say, what do you think about rental properties? And I said, well, the thing with rental properties, I grew up in a family that my father and mother, my mother's going to be 98 years old, and they, when they were 19, they bought their first rental property. They bought a duplex at 19. To this day, we have eliminated. My father passed away. We've sold almost all of the real estate. We still have a couple of them, all right, that are left. But the point of it is I always tell people real estate is fine, but it's a real estate business. It's not like recurring, do nothing money, that kind of thing. And so a lot of times if you have a few rental houses, as you get older, they become a bigger hassle, whereas when you're younger, you don't mind that. So you have to think about that when you're doing rental properties as a source of income. Now, do I understand how rentals work? Absolutely. You can buy rental properties, put a down payment down, get the rent, somebody else to rent it. You got appreciation in the property. You got depreciation in the fact that you can write off a lot of things. It's got tax benefits. It's got all those things. It also is a business. You have to rent it out. You have to advertise it. You have to maintain it. You have to file your taxes. You got to do all that kind of stuff. And so if you're considering rentals or if you have rentals, You know, my take is, I see it all the time, as people get older, the rental properties become bigger hassles. They're not getting the top rent on it. There's all these different things. So my experience has always been, unless you're able to have so many of those rentals, and to the point that you have professional people, full-time people that are working and managing that for you, or at the very minimum, turn it over to some company like that. You know, I'm not real keen on rental properties for people as they get older. And so a lot of times what we'll see happen is they'll convert from that. Hey, you go make a lot of money in real estate when you're coming up and own some of those properties and do all that kind of stuff. I got a buddy of mine that's got 300 of those things. Can you imagine that? 300 rental properties. It's great, okay? But he's got a full-time staff, okay, that manages all that kind of stuff. And so, but still, it's work, and that's what it is. And so that's some ideas on that. Now, what do we do when we withdraw money? You know, how do we go about withdrawing it? Well, the first thing is we go back to our budget. When I'm meeting with people, the first thing it is, I say, okay, you're getting ready to retire. Let's get your budget. And let's take into account, you know, what it takes to live. And then once we come up with what it takes to live, we're going to then make a list of all our income sources. We've got Social Security. We got a pension. We've got, you know, the money that's sitting in the 401k or the IRA that we're going to convert to income. Maybe we got a rental house or two. We got some outside investments, things like that. Maybe you own a business and it's, you know, there, and maybe you get an income off that business. Maybe you've got a business, you got to make a decision on whether you're going to keep it or sell it. You know, in the business I'm in, we have that kind of stuff going on all the time where people decide, you know, I don't want to continue doing it. So they sell it to a younger person in order to, you know, be able to take care of their customers and also to be able to do that kind of thing. So got all these different things. You know, I know I did a lot of work with dentists. And those dentists, as they retire, you know, it's a plan. It's a succession plan. How are you going to do it? Are you going to bring in your kids? Did they get a license? And now they're going to be a dentist? Or is it something that, you know, you got to put your business in place? But one of the things I do know about business owners, if you own a business, one thing you need to know is that as you slow down, your business valuation starts slowing down. And so normally I tell people if they're thinking that they're not going to have a succession plan to be able to make the business continue and be a lifetime plan, you know, for their kids or something like that, and they don't have anybody that's competent to be able to do that and run those plans. So what I would do then is I would turn around and I would start preparing the business to be sold. And then one day when I least want to sell it, that's when I do something like that. And so we're doing all that. Then we're going to move into these withdrawal options. I want you to stay tuned with me. I got one more segment, and we're going to get into like pulling all this stuff together in a way to give you some stats and figures and options, okay, to do things. My name is Roy Matlock Jr. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back. Roy Matlock Jr., the Money and Business Hour, where we help you do the things that matter. Hey, raise your income. We're always working on that. It's all about income and outgo and making sure there's a gap. And it doesn't matter if you're 20 years old, you need income more over and above your outgo. If you're 40 years old, if you're 60 years old, if you're 80 years old, you need to always be thinking, okay, if I can figure out a way to have less going out than I got coming in, and I have a gap, that is the quality of life gap, all right? And when we look at the quality of life gap, we want to create something that will allow us. Now, what causes us to have a quality of life? Well, as we get out into the retirement mindset, I'm going to make the assumption right now that the people I'm talking to, you're probably 50 years old and up. You may be even retired, that kind of thing. And so we're going to talk to you today. We have a lot of shows where we, you know, do the basics to where someone's a young couple getting started. You know, I tell people if you're young or if you have kids or grandkids or something like that, you know, the most important thing you do is get them educated. And if you get them educated, they can start making good decisions. Those good decisions compound when it comes to money and finance. And, you know, think about it. What if you can get rid of the financial worries? I mean, wouldn't that be worthwhile spending a few minutes listening to something or doing something? And that's what we do. We've got a couple of ways you can do that at roymatlockjr.com. We have the Family Financial Workshop. It's a 3-hour course that you can get your 16-year-olds in there and teach them how to do things. That is 3 hours. It's on Zoom. It's good. I promise you. If you go to the website, you can download that. You got the podcast. There's roughly 100 shows on the podcast. You can pick. There are all kinds of things that you can go in there and just look at them and listen to the shows you want or go through the series. We also have our money series. It's a 13-part 45-minute Zoom course. It's free. All of these things are free resources. I wrote all of the content for this. Every bit of it is. If you're listening right now and I'm keeping your attention, then guess what? You got hours and hours and hours and hours and hours of more stuff to get there. So what are your seven risks that we run into when we retire? Believe it or not, the first one is debt. I'm going to talk about that. The other one is longevity, meaning you outlive your money. We have healthcare risk. We have taxation risk. You know, for all these years we've been accumulating money. What do? We try to cut our taxes. Now we owe our taxes. You know, if you have $1 million IRA and you pull it out right now, you owe about a third of it to the government. How about that? And so what can we do in order to, reduce our taxes? You know, taxes are a bill. I always tell people this. You know, if you found a way to cut your electric bill or defer your electric bill and be able to invest the money in, and rather than pay the electric company now, you invested it, and they said, look, just pay us later, and you don't have to pay us anymore. You can have all the gains on the investment returns that you get because you invested the electric bill. Now, we would do that. Why would we pay it now? We'd rather pay it later. And that's what an IRA is. It's what a retirement account is. The only difference is that the taxation is what we're deferring, or we pay it up front, and then we get it tax-free. But one way or the other, the government's going to get it. We have market risk, which market risk is losing your money. Interesting enough, of all the risk out there, market risk is the one risk that people worry more about, yet it's probably the least risk out there, provided that you understand how things work. When the market goes up, the market goes down. You know, that's okay. We just will hang in there and do whatever, and that's by being prepared. We have purchasing power or inflation risk, meaning that, you know, it's great if you have some guarantees in your income, but the problem with your guarantees is that they may not buy what they used to buy. For instance, if you put $100,000 in the bank right now, come back 10 years from now, that $100,000 will be safe and secure, no market risk. But the challenge is that it won't purchase what it will purchase today. So used to, you could go buy, you know, a car for $20,000 or $10,000. You can't do that anymore. So if you're not beating inflation, you have that. And then lastly, you have probate risk or inheritance risk. And that's how can we take all of our hard work that we do and pass it on to our kids for them to have a better life? You know, when you're, it's one thing about kids that, I think everybody has got the same thing. We are very unselfish. Our whole goal is when we have children is to do something for them to have a better chance in life. It doesn't always work out that way, but that's what we do. And so inheritance, very important that you understand that you have to do things in order for that money that you've worked so hard or that business or farm or whatever it is, you have to do something in order to make sure that it works. All right, and it gets to the next generation. Otherwise, if you don't plan, for instance, and you've accumulated a lot of money, then the IRS will jump right in there. And if things are the way it sounds right now, they're going to jump right in there even more in a more prevalent way to get that through inheritance taxes and things like that. And so you have to be a planner, and that's where proper estate planning works. So anyway, so let's talk about living longer. Let me give you an example here. Medicine is, or what we call, biotech and biomeds, all these kind of things. What they're doing is they're getting smarter. And I read an article from Bill Gates, and he said, if you're healthy in 2030, and get this is what he said, with everything that's going on, if you're healthy by 2030, then you may live forever. How about that? You know, I mean, think about that. He made that statement. I mean, the guy, you know, I don't agree with Bill Gates on a lot of things, but the guy's not stupid, all right? And he says if you can make it to 2030 and you're in good health, you're probably going to stay there. You could live forever with everything that goes on. And so think through that. People are living longer and longer than the average life expectancy. I know COVID kind of did a little bit to it, but, you know, for the most part, people are living. By age 65, U.S. males in average health If you're 65, you're going to live, 40% of you are going to live to age 85. Females have 53% chance to live at age 85. And if you're married, there's a 72% chance that you'll live to 85. My mom and dad, 89 and now 98. And so you think about it, if you are 65 right now, the chances, if you're a man, are 20%, you'll make it to 90. 31% if you're a female, you'll make it to 90. And as a couple, there's 45%, one in two, if you're married and right now you're age 65, one in two are going to make it to age 90. Get this, let's go to 95, 6% of men, 12% of women, and 18, about 20%, almost 20% of the couples will make it to age 95. So what does that mean? That means that if you retire at age 65, you got to make your money not only last, it's got to grow. You got to make it happen. So we're living longer. That's our first risk. And so when we start thinking about this, the questions people have, they say, well, what are some of the things that I need to do when I retire? I need to get out of debt. Okay, that's one of my things. And I don't mean good debt. Good debt is debt you can afford. It may be tied to a mortgage or something like that. I'm talking about bad debt. Because if I'm going to live forever, I mean, if I've been in debt my whole life, what am I going to do when I don't have my income? So we got to get you out of debt. We got to look at, will our investments hold up? How long am I going to live? What are unexpected, which are really not cost or events that erode my savings? All right. So what we're going to do is we're going to go in and we're going to start looking at our current retirement assets, our monthly income, our expenses, our asset allocation, where are we going to put the money, and we're going to make some recommendations. So let me give you some examples of what I do when I meet with people. They say, how much do you need to retire? And I have people, I've worked and built myself into a position where I live a really good life. You know, I've lived by that, live on half and save and do all that kind of stuff. And I've been doing it forever. And so I built my financial independence plan a long time ago. Fortunately, I got in the money business. And, you know, it's kind of like you're a hypocrite if you don't take care of yourself, if you're teaching everybody. And so I did. I practice what I preach. And, you know, I've had, pretty much financial independence for many, many, many years. And I had one of my friends that I play golf with and at a country club. And he says to me, what's the number? All right, what's the number? I said, well, based on your lifestyle, he was a surgeon. I said, based on your lifestyle, it's $4 million. And he's like, really? I'm like, yeah, $4 million. $4 million is probably about the number. All right, and this was a number of years ago. And so how do I come up with that? Well, here's how I come up with it. I look and I said, well, you need 16 to 20 times your goal, okay? So let's say you're wanting to retire on $100,000 a year. Well, if you wanted to quit right now, you would need $1.6 million to $2 million, all right? Now, how do I come up with that? Well, if you take 20 times your income and pull 5% off, 5% of $2 million would be 100 grand a year. There you go. How about that? So 16 to 20 times. Another way people look at it, they say, well, I could, what's the 16? Well, every year you could say, I'm going to take 1/16th, and that's going to be my earnings that year that I get to pull. So if I've got $2 million, I'd pull 6%. That's $120,000. If the market beats 6% that year, then I'm going to pull 6% of a larger number. But if the market goes backwards, I'm going to pull 6% of a lower number. Okay. So that's another way I look at it. Now, why do we do that? It's similar if you have a job and you're working. What happens is you have a good year, you probably are able to spend a little bit more, maybe get a bigger bonus, stuff like that. But if you have a bad year, you know, you kind of pull back. If throughout your lifetime there, I mean, I can tell you in my business and every other business, there's good years and bad years. Some years, you know, they're pretty normal, but, you know, they always like to plan on, you know, if something goes the wrong way, what am I going to do? I'm going to make adjustments right then. You know, I mean, I saw 2008 hit the investment market like, if you saw your investments go down, well, guys like me, we got dinged as a result of that. And so I had to do the same thing. And so what you do, you say, well, what are some recommendations? So I go in and I say, well, 16 to 20 times your income. If you want to take Social Security out of that, well, let's take your Social Security out. And let's take any pensions out. And then we need 16 to 20 times what's left over and whatever the gap is. And so what we're doing right now, we're going through setting up the plans. how to do it. And so if you are listening in right now, I have been doing this for 36 years. I have people that I have trained that have been with me many, many years. If you need help, I would recommend you go to the resource, RoyMatlockJr.com. You can call 24/7. We have an answering service that will answer your call, 615-843-2999. You can set up a 15-minute phone call to find out if it's a fit. And if so, we'll work with you to help you move toward your goals. With that being said, stay tuned. Stick in with us. We'll continue on this. My name is Roy Matlock Jr. We'll talk to you next week.